Hello, this is Mike Drosolik for an MMA Torch audio update for Monday, November 19th, 2007. And I'm here today with Amy Robinson from the PA Fighter website. How you doing, Amy?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, fine.
All right.
Tell us a little bit about your site before we get started.
We pretty much just follow every aspect of sport in the state of Pennsylvania, from updates on how the regulation is going to covering upcoming bouts and different news updates on fighters who are actually from the state.
Cool. So I guess this week's UFC show was rather interesting with former Clarion wrestler Frankie Edgar on the show.
Oh, yeah. We definitely always watch Frankie Edgar from his wrestling days in the greater Pittsburgh area, and it's good to see him having some success on the big level of UFC.
Yeah, the other thing that's interesting in Pennsylvania is a lot of the fighters that train here are competing in Ohio, and they really need to move on the regulation here, but if it's anything like the gambling that they had in the city, it's probably going to take a long time before there's regulation. Is there any update on that?
Nothing more than just that they are starting the process of getting the sport regulated in the state. It's been kind of the status quo for the past 6 months since that information broke, and there really hasn't been any solid progress as far as a sure date as to when we're going to have fights in the state. The fighters are still going to have to be going to places like Ohio and New Jersey to fight for the time being, it looks like.
Yeah, it's sad, but I guess it's the reality of the sport, and you get to some of the states like Pennsylvania, New York, Massachusetts, that it's taking a long time to get regulated there. And the UFC is doing a pretty good job since they picked up Mark Ratner on bringing states on board. But those are three big states there. Pennsylvania is a huge wrestling state. Especially in the eastern part of the state and the western part of the state, where MMA could just be very big here.
Oh, yeah. MMA is definitely starting to have a really big buzz as far as fans in the state of Pennsylvania. And everywhere you look, there's new schools popping up. There's fighters on all kinds of shows, from UFC with Frankie Edgar and Carmelo Marrero to the IFL. You've got guys like Justin Levins and Adam Lynn, and it's really becoming a hotbed for MMA. It's just unfortunate that they haven't been able to get the ball rolling on the regulation like they have in Ohio. They're going a little slower, like the state of New York, for example, which seems like they've been talking about the regulation forever, and they just have never been able to put it into action. It looks like that's the situation in Pennsylvania right now, too.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see that once it does get regulated, where the bigger promotions will hold shows. As of right now, I really can't see UFC holding a show in a place like Mellon Arena. When we get the new hockey arena, that they'll decide to come here. But it seems like Philadelphia would probably be the city where they would run first.
Yeah, it looks like there's a little bit of a stronger culture of MMA in Philadelphia. I don't know if Pittsburgh is quite a big enough market the UFC wants to go to right now. And Philadelphia is close to the New York, New Jersey tri-state area that they always seem to run pretty well in. So that's probably why Philadelphia is a more likely target than Pittsburgh right now. But the MMA shows right across the border in Columbus and Cincinnati have all done really well for the UFC, so Pittsburgh might be a place to look at that they normally wouldn't, that they could potentially draw a really good gate at. And if the UFC doesn't come here, maybe another promotion like the IFL might look at coming here.
Yeah, it's there's been rumors going around that Kurt Angle could end up in the IFL, and I doubt it will happen, but you may get the Kurt Angle team.
Yeah, I think it's probably more likely that he would go into the IFL as a coach. I've been a pro wrestling fan since I was a little kid, and I followed Kurt, obviously, you know, being from Pittsburgh throughout his career, and I just don't think he has the physical capability to be a mixed martial artist. He's had tremendous amount of strain put on his back and his neck, many lagging serious injuries in his back and his neck. I really don't see him being able to compete and to even train at the highest level of mixed martial arts. I don't think he would physically be able to do it.
Yeah, there were rumors a few months back that he was training at Pittsburgh Fight Club, but I don't know if those were true, and I really doubt it.
Yeah, I do too. I think a lot of the talk about him coming to mixed martial arts is probably more of a pro wrestling publicity move to try and draw in some of the MMA fans, but I think he does have an interest in it, and he does seem to be pretty passionate about it. I think we could potentially see him as an IFL coach, seeing as they're not too shy about having people who aren't actual current fighters or who aren't fighters at all coming in as coaching, like they've had with the Tokyo Sabres. So I think we could potentially see Kurt in that kind of capacity.
Yeah, the one funny story about Kurt is he was on a local radio station the one day and talking about his MMA training, and we were heading out to Youngstown, Ohio, and we believe he said that he was training with Steve Corson, who is a former member of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And in thinking about it, we were like, wait a minute, isn't Steve Corson dead? And I just got weird visions in my head of Kurt practicing submission holds on a corpse.
Yeah, well, you got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah. Yeah, what I think he meant was Craig Wolfley.
Yeah.
Okay, we had a pretty busy weekend in the world of MMA. There were two big shows this weekend, Strikeforce out in San Jose at the HP Pavilion, and the UFC 78 in New Jersey at, I believe, some arena named after probably a bank.
Yeah, the Prudential Arena, I think it was.
Okay. And we're going to start off running down the results of the Strikeforce show, which I covered on the MMA Torch site. And the opening match was a tournament contest between Jorge Santiago and Sean Salmon. And Santiago won by TKO in 24 seconds of round one. What were your thoughts on this?
I think I was very impressed by Santiago's knockout ability. We really hadn't seen much of him in the UFC. Some of his appearances were very short with the two knockout losses. And for him to come in and just completely dominate Sean Salmon like that, it was definitely impressive.
Yeah, Santiago is one of those guys that he started off good in the UFC with a win over Justin Levens. But then he had two knockout losses, both to Lieben and Alan Belcher. And it looked like his biggest issue was going to be his chin, but he ended up bouncing back, and he's on a four-fight winning streak right now and has looked good. He's defeated Jeremy Horn by submission, and he also beat Andre Semenov at the second Bodog pay-per-view.
Yep. He's definitely got some wins over really game opponents right now. He's got a nice little streak going for him.
Yeah. I thought the big story of the match was the Salmon reaction to the knockout. He went stiff in the ring, and his arms and legs were up in the air, and word is he had a seizure.
Yeah, that was a very serious knockout. It's rare that you see something like that, and we've seen it twice with Sean Salmon, so I don't know what it is about the guy, but he just does not take knockouts well.
Yeah, it seems like a sign of problems he has, probably neurological problems. And the question is now, should Sean Salmon be allowed to fight?
Yeah, that definitely is a big question. Going into the show, they had some neurological problems with Yuki Sasaki, who was supposed to be in the tournament originally. It's funny that Salmon would go on to replace him, but I think he definitely, for any promotion that they're planning on using him in the future, which I think he has a fight schedule with HD Net fights coming up. They have to seriously consider looking into his mental and his neurological capabilities as far as if it's going to be dangerous or not to have him in the ring.
Yeah, it's he's been suspended indefinitely right now, so he will not be fighting Jason Miller at the HD Net fight that is coming up. So at least that's a good sign.
That's probably for the best. In California, one thing they do seem to do right in California is the medicals there. They seem to take it very seriously.
Yeah, we saw, especially at the K1 show earlier this year, that a lot of fighters, they weren't allowed to compete because they could not pass their physicals. And I think it's a good thing because it shows how far the sport has come. That you watch some of the early stuff that went on, and especially UFC, and some of these guys, it's amazing that they were even allowed to step into the cage.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely shows how far that UFC has kind of affected every other aspect of the sport to where we have such stringent medical regulations now. And it's a really good thing because it keeps the fighters safe and it keeps the sport safe as a whole from having any kind of negative backlash from a potential serious injury.
Yeah. Okay, moving on to the second match in the tournament. We had Trevor Prangley defeating Felinico Vitali by referee's decision after an eye poke.
Yeah. I don't know about those referee's decisions. I was not too keen on that coming in as far as the referee getting to decide the winner, but I did think Prangley probably deserved to win that fight.
Yeah, I had the first round on my unofficial scorecard for Vitali, but Prangley was definitely coming back. So the judge's decision for a draw was a correct decision in my book, but we needed someone to move on in the tournament, and Marco Rosales, the referee, ended up giving the fight to Prangley.
Yeah, it was very close. I mean, the draw was definitely warranted, but like you said, they needed someone to make the final decision to keep the tournament going, and I guess the referee's decision was the best way for them to do it.
Yeah, it's a little weird, though. I don't know if I like that or not. It's not really the referee's job to do that. He's basically in there to make sure the fighters are safe and really shouldn't be paying attention to scoring a fight while he's doing his job.
Yeah, it definitely is very difficult to keep track of who's ahead with the little indiscrepancies we have in the scoring system nowadays when you're trying to, you know, keep the two guys from killing each other, basically. You know, when you're trying to pull a guy off of somebody else, you're not counting up points in your head. So there is some flaws in the system, but I think overall it worked pretty well.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, too, where the fight was close at that point and could have gone either way. So it's very hard to say that, you know, either man did not deserve to win, which they both fought hard and did well during the match.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's also in a situation where you've got a close fight like that. You pick a winner, but still, you'd never know if something would happen. Somebody would have to drop out of the tournament. Obviously, Vitali would be right there to replace him. So you get two winners out of it.
Yeah. Okay. Next fight was Luke Stewart defeating Bryson Kamaka by knockout with a knee in 19 seconds. There really wasn't much here. It was a quick fight, and Kamaka just seemed completely outmatched by Stewart.
Yeah, I looked at his record. He's a losing record. He hasn't fought that many strong fighters, that many well-known fighters. But Luke Stewart, still, it's pretty impressive for a guy who's coming from a predominantly jiu-jitsu background.
Yeah, he's, I believe, a Health Gracie student.
Yeah, out of San Francisco.
Okay. Yeah, and he looked very impressive. I believe I've seen him fight twice.
Yeah, he's undefeated so far. He's fought some good guys like Jeremiah Metcalf and Jason Von Flue, and so far he's got the no losses on his record, so he's doing pretty well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where he ends up from here because all five of his fights have been in Strikeforce. Not very many of them have made the main card, but he definitely looked very impressive here and should be on the main show for a lot of their future cards.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I think Strikeforce wants to promote him as kind of one of their in-house stars too, so I don't think it'll be too strange to see him in bigger fights with more named opponents as we go along.
Yeah, the next fight was a non-title match between Bobby Southworth and Anthony Ruiz, and Ruiz won by a cut in the second round in 52 seconds. Your thoughts on this one?
I was really surprised that Ruiz won. Obviously, he's kind of a journeyman fighter. All the guys he's fought that have been named guys, he hasn't really won. And for Bobby to come in there and lose as a champion, that doesn't speak well for Strikeforce to have their light heavyweight champion losing to a guy that not many people know.
Yeah, it came as a shock to me too, since I didn't think very much of Anthony Ruiz coming into the match, but he held his own in the first round. Bobby Southworth probably took the round though, and then came out in the second round and landed a beautiful four-punch combination. It was four hooks that dropped Southworth, cut him, and he was able to then pounce on him and do a little bit of damage before they had the doctor check the cut.
I really don't know where they go from here with their champion losing to Anthony Ruiz and without the belt being on the line. I guess he's next in line for a title shot.
Yeah, I would think so. He definitely deserves one after that performance.
Yeah, I definitely see, a rematch between them with the title on the line.
Okay, next was the debut of World Kickboxing Champion Brian Schwartz as he lost a unanimous decision to Lamont Davis.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I didn't know a lot about both guys coming in. All I knew was Schwartz was a kickboxer and was pretty big in the San Jose area. He had a big following, which is why his fight was featured as deep into the card as it was. But it was unfortunate he couldn't win when Strikeforce was trying to push him so hard.
Yeah, I had Schwartz winning the first round. He looked pretty impressive coming out, but once he got to the ground, he didn't really do much except hold on.
Yeah, we see that a lot coming from predominantly stand-up fighters, but I would have expected him to be a little more prepared when he was coming in as such a big star. He should have kind of known that there was a good possibility it could have gone to the ground. With any kickboxer, you obviously are going to think, take it straight to the ground. So I was a little disappointed in that too.
Yeah, it's amazing how far the sport has come, but we still have guys that are willing to go out there without much of a ground game at all.
I see Houston Alexander on that one coming up, huh?
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah.
Then we had the first Strikeforce heavyweight champion crowned, and that was Alistair Overeem defeating Paul Buontello by submission after knees to the body. And that was in the second round in 3 minutes, 42 seconds. Overeem just completely schooled Buontello throughout the whole fight, and it didn't even look competitive.
Yeah, it didn't really say a lot for Paul Buontello, guys who had title shots in UFC. He was supposed to be, one of the premier heavyweights that Strikeforce was featuring, if not their biggest heavyweight that they had. And Overeem just came in and completely dominated him.
Yeah, the one thing that's always been Overeem's problem has been his conditioning, and we didn't see that here at all. He looked
No,
fresh
no.
when the fight ended.
Yeah, it was
And
a very impressive performance by Alistair Overeem, and I think the UFC and maybe some other bigger organizations are going to have to take a serious look at him and bring him in, because he looked really stout against Paul Bontello.
yeah, what amazed me most is how well he worked the body throughout the whole fight. It was just beautiful how from the ground he was working the body, from the clinch.
Great knees. He had great knees in that fight, and obviously that's what marked Paul's downfall, but I liked how he worked the knees throughout the entire fight. It was a good performance.
Yeah, the only thing Bontello really did well throughout the fight was defend the guillotine choke. Overeem kept going back to that, and Bontello was he was easily able to turn into it and defend it, which we saw that Vitor Belfort was unable to do in it against Overeem. So I guess that's one good thing about Bontello.
Yeah, it definitely speaks to him as far as a stand-up fighter. He's, you know, obviously adapted his game a little bit to be able to at least defend on the ground, and that's more than a lot of other guys who predominantly rely on their stand-up can say.
Okay, going into the finals of the tournament, we had George Santiago defeating Trevor Prangley with a knee to the body, and that was in the first round in about 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, long night's work for Santiago. He got things done pretty quickly and pretty impressively. I thought George Santiago was the star of that show, really.
Yeah, he looked great throughout the whole show, and he's another guy that that a promotion like UFC is going to have to take a second look at and say,
yeah,
is it worth bringing this guy back?
They seem to kind of write him off a little quickly with the 2 knockouts, you know. And he did have that solid win over Levens, and for him to go back and really build up his record the way he has shown a tremendous amount of growth to get these huge wins in Strikeforce via KO and that big win against Jeremy Horn. He's definitely brought himself along quite nicely.
Yeah, if you remember correctly, the fight with Lieben was all Santiago's fight until the knockout occurred. He looked great in that fight, and it just seemed like his chin ended up failing him.
Yeah, he got caught, but he was pretty much in control, which a guy like Lieben, who's been seen as pretty good mainstay in the UFC middleweight division, that's, you know, it's a pretty good thing when you can hang with someone who at least is mid-card on the UFC. It says a lot to your skills, and now he's gone on to get even bigger wins than someone like Chris Lieben. So I think that's kind of erased that loss off of his record.
Okay, and the main event, we had Kung Lee defeating Sam Morgan by a TKO with a liver kick in the third round in about 2 minutes.
Yeah, Kung, he looked good again. Of course, you know, I don't know how Sam Morgan compares in relation to Frank Shamrock, but he did well against Morgan. He used his best assets and got the win.
Yeah, the one thing I noticed about this fight was Sam Morgan was very aggressive, almost to the point where he was really sloppy coming out and took a lot of damage in the first round.
Yeah, a bit reckless, but as far as we've seen from Sam Morgan, he does have a pretty much kind of bring it on fighting style where he just likes to go out there and brawl. And I don't know if that was the best style against a guy like Kung Lee, who's really a technician and can see, you know, the openings that are glaring to him, and he can just go in and take you apart at will. So that definitely wasn't the smartest game plan to go in against Kung, but that's really Morgan's best asset, so that's all he had to work with.
Yeah, the one thing in Kung's game that kind of stood out to me was his top game. He seemed to allow a little bit too much space when riding his opponent on top, and that from side control, it seems to be rather easy to elbow escape on him and work your way back to guard. Did you notice the same thing?
Well, yeah, that's definitely, you know, the biggest thing you have to worry about with a guy like Kung Lee coming into mixed martial arts is, you know, how he's going to work the ground game. And I've talked about it tonight, you know, when a stand-up fighter comes into mixed martial arts, the biggest thing they have to work on is translating some kind of ground game into their game plan. And I don't think we've really seen Kung tested that much yet, but he's going to be against Frank Shamrock. Obviously, Frank's smart enough to know he's going to take him down to the ground immediately in that fight, and Kung's going to have a hard time with it, I think, if he can't get things on the feet.
Yeah, the other two big announcements on the show was Jerry Millen, the former head of Pride USA, was there. And he announced for the next Strikeforce show a main event of Gilbert Melendez taking on Josh Thompson. And then later on in the show, Kung Lee challenged Frank Shamrock to a fight at a future Strikeforce event. What are your thoughts on those two fights?
I'm really looking forward to seeing Kung against a guy like Frank Shamrock. Like I said, I don't know if the fighters we've seen him against so far can really, you know, attest to how great of a middleweight or a welterweight he's going to be. But I think Shamrock's definitely going to push him very hard, and we're going to see the true, you know, core of Kung Lee's mixed martial arts game. And as far as Melendez and Thompson goes, I really like that fight. I've been wanting them to make that for a while, and I'm excited to see how Brandon Melendez does against a young veteran like Josh Thompson, who really likes to push the pace. And I think it'll be a really great fight. It's probably going to be one of the best fights that Strikeforce has had for a main event.
Yeah, I find both fights to be pretty exciting fights. Although the Kung Lee Frank Shamrock fight, other than for business reasons, seems out of place. It seems like there are two levels in the middleweight division in Strikeforce right now, where you have guys like Jordan Santiago and Trevor Prangley, who are probably more deserving of a shot at the middleweight belt over Kung Lee. But it seems like those guys are being passed over and in order to rush a fight with Kung Lee. And I don't know. It just doesn't seem right, because Kung has beaten guys that are practically welterweights, guys like Jason Von Slew,
yeah.
Sam Morgan,
170
Tony Strickland.
Pounders, yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely going to be a different fight with Frank Shamrock. It's a huge step as far as level opponents goes, but I can most definitely see why Strikeforce is pushing for this fight. You know, they're trying to keep themselves afloat as far as the big names in MMA promotion, and Kung Lee is one of their biggest stars, and Frank Shamrock is probably, they're probably their two biggest stars, really. And obviously that fight is going to be a big draw for them as far as the money-wise. They might even get it on pay-per-view. So it's really about the business decision as far as to make that so soon in Kung's career. But, you know, even if Kung doesn't have the best showing against Shamrock, I'm sure they're still pushing him as a star, and we could perhaps see them fight again a little bit down the road when Kung's had a little more experience.
Yeah, I definitely agree that it's probably going to sell out the HP Pavilion. But as far as a pay-per-view match goes, it's hard to see how that would be a huge draw compared to even a UFC event like last weekend.
Oh, yeah, it's not going to pull, you know, anywhere close to UFC numbers, and they can't even expect that. But as far as the smaller shows who've run pay-per-view, I think Bulldog has done a pay-per-view for their show in Vancouver, if I'm not mistaken. And if you can draw solid numbers, it's good exposure for your company. It definitely, if you could say you've been on pay-per-view, it definitely puts you up a level as far as MMA promoters have gone. And you never know, they might get a solid draw with Frank Shamrock. He does, for all his faults, he does still have a good amount of fans out there. And obviously, everybody in the San Jose area is going to, you know, who can't get to the pavilion are going to watch it on pay-per-view to see Kung. So, you know, they might get something out of it.
Yeah, it'll definitely be an exciting fight, too. And Kung Lee is just amazing to watch. every one of his fights so far, except for the Von Flew fight, has been a very interesting fight, and we've always seen new things from him. And this fight, we saw quite a bit of judo throws from the having a double overhook, and it was just beautiful stuff.
Yeah, it's always great, you know, when a guy like Kung, who really was a master of his particular discipline, moves into MMA, such as Brock Lesnar, who was a master of wrestling, it's going to draw attention, and Kung's done really well so far, and he definitely is exciting. Obviously, his style, his kickboxing, and his Sanchel have translated nicely into exciting fights, but he's definitely grown as far as, like you said, throws, the takedowns, all of that. He's really looking good, and it does say a lot when you have a exciting middleweight like Kung Lee, when, you know, a sea of cards like UFC 78 are out there, and you can say you've got this really great stand-up fighter. It's definitely a huge draw for Strikeforce.
Okay, speaking of UFC 78, let's move on to there.
All right.
I don't believe it. You've caught all of the prelim matches, but I'm just going to go over the results. Akihiro Gono defeated Camden McCrory in the second round with an arm lock. I had McCrory winning the first round, but Gono came back in the second and dropped him with a left hook and quickly passed his guard to side control and finally got him out and finished with a real nice armbar. It ended up being submission of the night, and there was quite a lot of torque on McCrory's shoulder.
Yeah, I saw the replay and submission of the night. It looked pretty nasty, but I was surprised from all the recaps that I heard that McCrory was winning the stand-up. I really expected Gono to pretty much dominate this fight, so that does say a lot for McCrory.
Yeah, McCrory came out very aggressive in the first round and was basically chasing Gono around the cage. Gono did a good job, though. He landed some nice punches. Whenever McCrory threw a kick, he'd catch it and answer that with the right straight. But I had McCrory winning the first round. Good fight, though. One of those ones it's worth tracking down if you can find it.
Yeah, it's out there.
In the second fight, Marcus Aurelio defeated Luke Caudillo with ground and pound from side mount. I like this one because they came out and Aurelio hit a very nice Ippon Tsunagi, okay, but was unable to get a takedown off of it. He wasn't able to control him after the throw, which was really the only judo we saw all night, which is strange considering Cara was on the card. But once he finally did get Caudillo to the ground, his top game is just way too strong for most people to handle, and he finished with some ground and pound from side mount. Moving on, we had Joe Lauzon defeating Jason Reinhardt by rear naked choke very quickly in the first round. I believe it was less than a minute.
I think it was about a minute 10, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
In the teens or so, minute 14, I think.
Yeah, it was what the one prelim that was shown on the pay-per-view, and what did you think of Lauzon?
I thought he looked great, but against a guy like Reinhardt, who was clearly not in Joe's league, I mean, what can you say? You know, it was the performance that you would expect from Joe, considering, you know, Reinhardt, you know, wasn't really on the same level as him. I think Joe showed well, and I would really like him to start facing a little more of the upper echelon as far as lightweight fighters instead of these guys like Jason Reinhardt, who they're just kind of bringing in to feed the Joe.
Yeah, he after the Jens Pulver win, he looked very good on the reality show, and he also, at the Ultimate Fighter finale, pretty much destroyed Brandon Melendez.
Yeah, like I said, you know, Brandon Melendez isn't quite the level of competition I think Joe should be in, but he still has shown pretty dominant performances against against all these guys they brought in against they've brought in for him. He does have wins against, you know, top guys like Ivan Menjivar and, like you said, Pulver, Jorge Masvidal. So he has fought really good. He has a loss to Jorge, I think. He has fought really good guys, but I don't know why they're just trying to save him. I guess to build him up a little bit, but I think he's good enough that he can build himself up. He doesn't need to be fed these kind of safety guys.
Yeah, the one thing that impressed me most was how smooth his transitions were between each position. I mean, he was able to pass guard into side control like it was nothing, and then immediately moved to north-south and then side control on the other side before he ended up catching Reinhardt in the rear naked choke. And
It was flawless the way he caught that rear naked choke, and I think that has a lot to do with he's really stepped up his game since he didn't make it to the finals, as pretty much everyone projected on the Ultimate Fighter, and he's gone and worked with guys like BJ Penn now, and it really just shows the improvement that he's taken the time to make, and it shows that he's definitely a force in the lightweight division.
Yeah, I think where he is going to have trouble is if he would run into a guy that's a strong wrestler that can put him on his back, sort of like Manuel Gambiorian did on the show. And it's you probably have to avoid putting him in there with a guy like Frankie Edgar or a Clay Guida immediately, because I see those as being the two toughest guys for Joe right now.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, and the lightweight division is just the hounded with good wrestlers. So he may have a difficult time, but he definitely has the talent to be up there fighting against those guys. Even if he does lose, you know, he's definitely on that level.
Okay, moving on. We had Diego Alves defeating Chris Lytle via doctor stoppage due to a cut. And this was a really weird fight because Lytle dominated the stand-up when it came to hands, but Alves' kicks are just amazing right now. He has probably some of the best cut kicks in mixed martial arts. And I actually had the first round scored for Lytle and the second round scored for Alves. The cut occurred with I believe it was a right hook with the first punch of the fight. And Lytle's corner got it stopped in between the first and second round, and he wasn't bleeding anymore between the second and third round, but the doctor came in and decided to stop the fight.
Yeah, well, you'll have that. New Jersey is obviously one of the best commissions in the country. They're pretty strict as far as, you know, medical and their stoppage goes, so to see it end was unfortunate on a cut, but the fight, while it did last, it was obviously very good. But like I said, you know, they're very hard in New Jersey. They like to keep a tight ship, and they're just doing it for safety reasons. So I can see why they stopped it. It was unfortunate, but it was probably for the best.
Yeah, there's been a lot of strangeness with the New Jersey Commission this past week, with Larry Hazard getting thrown out as the head of the commission. And from what it looks like right now, it's a completely political situation that there's a new attorney general in the state, and they just want to move on, put their own person in, and they want to loosen up on some of the safety rules there.
Yeah, that's exactly what I heard, too. I heard the commissioner was fired pretty much for no reason. They just want someone new in there. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe that he has some lawyers looking at the situation. But his time as the head of the commission, he did very well. You know, the New Jersey State Athletic Commission has pretty much been a model for every other commission in the country as far as mixed martial arts sanctioning goes. So it's definitely a huge blow to the sport to see him removed.
Yeah, it's a huge blow to boxing, too. I mean, Larry Hazard has been in that position for since 1985, so that's 22 years now. And he's really well liked among a lot of the top boxers. And it's one of the reasons why New Jersey gets some big matches. Bernard Hopkins is out there right now protesting his firing. And it's just amazing that a political situation could ruin a good thing like they have going in New Jersey right now.
It's very unfortunate. And the biggest thing that's going to come out of this is potentially going to be New Jersey losing fight cards. You know, without the commission that was in place, MMA promoters might not be as comfortable going back there. And like you said, they get a lot of fights in boxing due to his connections. So it's going to have the biggest impact on the Commonwealth of New Jersey and the fight fans in New Jersey. And that's the saddest part of the whole thing.
Yeah, New Jersey, it's a state that got some of the UFCs around UFC 30 and, you know, it was a big state for them when Zuffa first purchased the promotion. But it seems to have fallen out of favor for California and in Nevada. But there's still a lot of shows. Ring of Combat is a great promotion for young fighters to make their pro debut on.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of guys from Pennsylvania fight for Ring of Combat and in New Jersey. And seems like in Atlantic City you can probably find an MMA show every weekend running. And it's been great, like you said, for the UFC when Zuffa first came on board, simply because they were the first state to regulate MMA. They were, you know, inclined to go there. And now, you know, with things in California being regulated and Las Vegas being a hotspot, they definitely gain, you know, UFC cards more than New Jersey. They seem to be forgotten about, but you can see why they seem to draw a little better in California. They always get huge attendance records out there, so it's obvious that they're going to move a little westernly, but it's been unfortunate they haven't been back to New Jersey as often as they should be.
Yeah, moving on, we have the main card, and the opener was Frankie Edgar winning a unanimous decision over Spencer Fisher. What were your thoughts on this one?
Edgar looked stout. You know, his wrestling was dominant. I was very surprised at Spencer Fisher's performance. I thought he would have put up a little more of a fight to Edgar. I thought he would have had a little more as far as takedown defense coming from Miletic with, you know, amazing wrestlers like Matt Hughes there. I thought he would have been more adapted to Frankie Edgar's wrestling, but he just didn't look like himself that fight.
Yeah, I saw Fisher's takedown defense against Dan Lozon, and it didn't look very good. I was surprised Lozon was able to take him down, but against Edgar, it was absolutely horrendous. I mean, this looked like a national wrestling champion that was going up against a JV backup.
Yeah, it wasn't good. I think he only stopped one takedown, and I think he fell down right after that. So it wasn't a good night for Spencer Fisher, but Frankie Edgar was just on, and he showed that you really got to look out for him in the lightweight division, because when he comes to take you down, it's going to be hard to stop, even if you do have good takedown defense, with Spencer lack.
Yeah, and the big problem with Fisher was he didn't seem to know how to sprawl. And it amazes me that someone that's from Iowa doesn't know how to wrestle. I mean, we're sitting there, and my one friend said to me, like, hey, what do you think Dan Gable thinks of that? And it was just a very embarrassing performance. On the ground, though, he did a pretty nice job of neutralizing Frankie Edgar. Frankie Edgar, he was very aggressive on top, but he makes a lot of mistakes, and he could really use a good jiu-jitsu coach right now.
Yeah, well, he's still a very young fighter, and he's only been in the game for a little while. And like you said, Spencer did do a pretty good job of tying him up on the ground. He had a few submission attempts, but overall, it just wasn't his best performance, and it really didn't look like he even belonged in there with Frankie Edgar.
Yeah, it's looking back, it's amazing that Spencer Fisher was in line for a championship shot.
Yeah,
and when
yeah.
he fought Jaime Franca, and it's like, okay, what would Sean Sherk have done to this man?
Yeah, it wouldn't have been good. It would have been, you know, Frankie Edgar times 100 with Sean Sherk, because Sherk's just such a veteran. He would have exploited every opportunity Fisher had given him. But I was very surprised. It wasn't, you know, it didn't speak well as far as Spencer's preparation.
Yeah, and one of the things with Spencer Fisher is he's been in a lot of exciting fights. Everyone's probably seen the fight with Matt Wyman a couple hundred times on UFC Unleashed, and he had some very good fights with Sam Stout too, but they're both guys that were willing to stand with him. Do you think that his takedown defense in this fight is pretty much exposed Fisher to the point where, you know, they're going to have to keep wrestlers away from him if they want to keep him competitive?
Oh, definitely. I kind of thought this going into the fight, too. I was thinking, you know, they'd be better off matching Fisher with someone who would be willing to go in to trade with him, and not a guy like Frankie Edgar who wants to take things right to the ground. But unless Spencer completely overhauls his training to include, you know, the incorporation of a takedown defense and maybe even a better game off of his back as far as jiu-jitsu goes, I think from now on every fighter is going to know if you're having a hard time with Spencer on the feet, take it right to the ground.
Yeah, and where do you think Frankie Edgar goes to here? Who would you like to see him go up against next?
I don't really know. You know, it's very tight in the top tier of the lightweight division. I think he'll probably get matched up with the winner of Guida and Huerta. But I don't know if that would be the best matchup for Roger Huerta. I think going into if he does win, I think going into the match with Guida, that's a lot of the same situation as Spencer Fisher and Frankie Edgar. So I think Guida takes the match with Huerta, and it'll end up being Frankie Edgar and Jorge Guida for, I don't know if it's a number one contender spot, but for definitely top spot in the lightweight division and somebody who has to be looked at for a title shot.
Yeah, I would definitely love to see Edgar take on Guida. That would be a very aggressive match. As far as wrestlers go, I do think Edgar has the edge there, so I could see Guida having a lot of trouble with him.
I think it would be a very exciting fight, much like the Edgar-Griffin fight, where Guida would be able to hold his own on the ground. He would have a tough time with the wrestling, but I think it could definitely be a similar fight to the Tyson-Griffin-Frank Edgar fight.
Okay, the second fight on the main show was Ed Herman defeating Joe Dworkin with a TKO, by TKO with a, I believe it was a left hook very early in the third round.
Yeah, that was surprising. I thought Dworkin would probably take it to a decision. And it was very impressive performance by Ed Herman. Obviously, we wouldn't expect him to be knocking people out going into it, but it ended quick, and he looked very good.
Yeah, Ed Herman is he's mostly a ground-and-pound fighter. He really doesn't do much well except for his ground-and-pound. He's not a great wrestler. His jiu-jitsu isn't great. But he has a pretty solid top game when it comes to getting an opponent down, getting on top of them, and being able to finish. But he looked much improved against Dworkin. He looked like he came into the fight out of shape. And he did take it on short notice, but he looked a little flabby around the midsection, and he gassed late in the fight.
Yeah, and Dworkin, I think they said on the commentary, he is known to take fights pretty late, which I didn't think going into it would hold him back very much. But like you said, it did seem to affect his performance. And Ed Herman just looked, you know, complete world of difference from his last fight with Joe Dworkin, where he got caught in a submission, and this time, you know, he just completely dominated. He got a knockout over a guy like Joe Dworkin, and for Ed Herman, that was really unexpected.
Yeah, the Dworkin, this is his, I believe, second loss in a row. He lost to Paulo Filho on the, I believe the last live WEC show. And I think one of his big issues is Darkson spends a little bit too much time trying to get a takedown and wastes way too much energy.
Yeah, he definitely looks to the ground. You know, he hasn't been very well known as a guy who has great power on the feet and stand up. His forte is definitely the ground, and he can overly expend himself doing that. We've seen with Jason McDonald lost to Matt Winland, where he did seem to blow his wad, and then he got bested on the ground.
Yeah, I had the first round scored for Ed Herman. I had the second round scored for Darkson, though. He was able to get Herman's back during the second round and had back mount on him. Ended up losing it pretty quick, but with time expiring, he caught a very quick triangle, and that's how he defeated Ed Herman the first time. And Herman ended up being saved by the bell.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was almost a repeat of the first fight, and Herman was lucky, but I think right before that, when he had Ed's back, and then Ed went on to get his back, so it was a little more competitive bout from the first one. So that does say a lot for Ed, but Joe just, you know, he had it, but he couldn't regain the momentum he had and get another submission and end it. So it was unfortunate for him, but I think Ed was probably the better man in that fight.
Yeah, and Darkson came out for the third round, and he just looked completely lackadaisical. And I believe he threw a cut kick to Herman's leg, and it was just like, oh, man, he's dropping his hands on this. And a little after I said that, he ends up getting knocked out.
Yeah, well, he definitely expended a whole lot of energy, even more trying to get the submission. So coming into that third round, he was probably already spent. He didn't have much left in him.
Yeah, and coming out of the fight, Darkson has a broken orbital bone, so he's probably going to be out for quite a while.
Yeah, but I don't think that'll affect him too much as far as mainstream fights, because he was a last minute replacement, and to lose him the way he did, I don't think the UFC will have him back on the main card anytime soon, at least.
Okay, the next match was a welterweight match where Carol Parisian defeated Rio Chonin by unanimous decision. Any thoughts here?
I was a little disappointed in the fight. I thought it would be a little more exciting than it was. You know, Carl was dominant, but not spectacularly dominant. And we didn't see too much out of Rio. It was a little disappointing for a debut for him coming in so highly touted, because he does have that win over Anderson Silva. It wasn't what I expected.
Yeah, Chonin trained out of Team Quest for this fight, and he seemed to train mostly on defense, okay? He seemed to be worried a lot about what Caro could do from the clinch with his upper body, and anytime Caro ended up attacking the legs, he was able to score a takedown.
Yeah, he was definitely focused on, you know, the tools Caro had as far as throws and trips and getting him down to the ground. He was a little too preoccupied on that, and I don't know. I just didn't see too much out of Chonin in this fight, and I was expecting a lot more than we saw.
Yeah, it wasn't a very exciting fight, and I think the consensus between everyone that was over at my place was, "Whoa, this is the first time I've seen Caro have a boring fight." And
yeah,
Thinking back on it, I can't think of any.
Yeah, he's definitely known for his great performances, so it was a bit of a shock. He, you know, you would think in a decision against Rio Chonin that the fight would be, you know, pretty action-packed, pretty back and forth, but it really wasn't what it should have been.
Yeah, coming out of the fight, there's a lot of people who believe that Caro Parisian's going to be fighting John Fitch to see who gets a shot at the welterweight championship after St. Pierre gets his shot. What are your thoughts on that fight?
I think Fitch's wrestling is very dominant, but Carl may be able to handle that. You know, he's gone in against a guy like Diego Sanchez, and he did have a loss against Sanchez, but at the same time, that fight was very close. So I think Parisian might have the edge as far as, you know, his jiu-jitsu, so he might be able to catch Fitch in a submission. But so far, everything we've seen from John Fitch has been pretty good. He's been good on the defense and dominant as far as his ground and pound, so Carl might be in some trouble.
Yeah, the one thing about Caro is he's had trouble with wrestlers in the past. He has three losses on his record to Sean Sharp. And it's one of those things that, yes, Fitch probably wasn't the wrestler that Sharp was back in his heyday, but it's Fitch has transitioned into mixed martial arts great.
Yeah, definitely. He's been coming along so well because of his camp. You know, he's with AKA, so he's had that, you know, nonstop stand-up training. And David Camarillo is also with AKA, so he's been getting good jiu-jitsu tutelage. But you never know. He is a fairly young fighter, fairly inexperienced as far as compared to Caro. And Caro may be able to catch him in something. But other than that, I really do see John Fitch pounding him out, you know, a la Sean Sherk.
Yeah, I see Fitch taking that fight, too. It's just that Caro really has fought a lot of opponents that weren't at the top level, and a lot of his wins have came against guys such as Chris Lytle, Nick Thompson, Drew Fickett, Josh Berkman, Rio, who have all been guys that you look at and say, you know, I can never picture these guys being champion.
Yeah, yeah. He has had a little bit of a build-up in his record because of his wins over less dominant guys, and they have been very dominant wins. But I think he does belong in the top of, you know, the 170 division, and he is going to give anybody who's at the top some trouble in a fight. And I think that definitely makes him worthy of being there.
Okay, the next fight on the show was Diego Silva winning by TKO over Usain Alexander. And I believe it was about 4 minutes into the first round.
It was a pretty quick fight as far as, you know, you would have expected things to go back and forth. You know, I, going into it, expected to go back and forth for all three rounds, and for it to end in the first, it was pretty surprising.
Yeah, I remember when Usain Alexander made his debut and against Keith Jardine. I had found one of his fights online, and it was like, oh, my God, this guy sucks.
Yeah.
I was completely shocked when he beat Jardine. And then I predicted Alessio Sakara to completely destroy him because, yeah, this guy sucks. And Alexander looked very good against Sakara, but we only really saw one dimension of him in the UFC. And apparently Usain Alexander doesn't have a ground game.
Yeah, it's a glaring flaw in his game plan that Thiago Silva obviously was going to hone in on that from the beginning. And with a guy like Silva, he's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. He comes from shootbox. He knows how to, you know, utilize the ground very well. I think Usain Alexander was, you know, beat from the start.
Yeah, Alexander did not come out as aggressive as he normally does. He went immediately into the clinch, where he's had some success against both Sakara and Jardine, but he, you know, just held on to Silva there. And then he actually went for a takedown, but Silva ended up getting a leg from the bottom, ended up on top, and I believe he started off in half guard and just moved into mount very easily.
Yeah, and Houston was expending a whole lot of energy trying to get a pretty much pointless choke on Thiago Silva, which really showed his inexperience on the ground for him to go for that kind of maneuver at that point in time. And I think Houston made a huge mistake by going to the clinch with Thiago Silva, because that's, you know, prime opportunity for him to take it to the ground. I think he would have been much better off for, you know, to have a game plan of going into things of keeping his distance and trying to pick off Silva that way. But he definitely was way, way overmatched.
Yeah, it looked like someone on stage jiu-jitsu class was, when he got mounted, like just trying to roll Silva over using only his hips. He wasn't trapping an arm or anything, and it was just like, oh, my God, this is pathetic.
He went into the thing Alexander did, saying he had a ground game. But if he does, we didn't see anything close to that at 78. And I think if he comes back to the UFC, if they have him back, which I think they will because there's two very exciting showings, I think he has to go to some other camp other than, you know, wherever he's training out of in Nebraska. He has to go to some kind of a camp that will work his ground game and only his ground game, because he obviously has the striking down. He needs to get with, you know, an American top team or a Sarah Jiu-Jitsu, somebody who can expel a whole wealth of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu knowledge on him in a very short amount of time, or else he's just going to be completely picked apart for the rest of the time in the UFC, because everybody's going to know, you know, go straight to the ground. It's this glaring opening on Houston Alexander. There's, you know, there's really no reason not to exploit it, because you're obviously going to have to, you're obviously going to be able to get the best of him there.
Yeah. When Silva was on top, he was throwing a lot of punches down on Alexander, and Alexander was, trying to control his posture at times, but then would just inexplicably let go.
Yeah.
And after a while, the referee stopped the fight, and a lot of people in the crowd just went completely silent because they seemed to really be behind Houston.
I think everybody was going into this. Everybody wanted to hope that Houston was, you know, the great black hope in the light heavyweight division, him and Quentin Jackson. And he was an exciting fighter, so to have this young, brash, exciting guy coming into the light heavyweight division, he just steamrolled over, you know, two top guys, a very top guy in Keith Jardine. Everybody was hoping that this was the birth of a next great, you know, light heavyweight contender, but without the ground game, he really had no chance, and he really let down a lot of UFC fans and let down the UFC, I think, who probably had a lot of big things planned for Houston.
Yeah, and where do you think he goes from here?
I think they have to keep him against similar guys who are going to go out and just brawl. There are a few of them in the 205 division, obviously, who we would love to go out and slug it out, but if they, you know, take the initiative to put him up against a more game fighter like Thiago Silva, who has a more well-rounded game and can take him to the ground and, you know, defeat him there, it's obviously not going to go Houston Alexander's way. So they have to keep him with the strikers to keep him successful in UFC, and that can only go so far. So, you know, I see him being a entertaining fighter at 205, but for the near future, I don't think he's not going to go very far at 205 without a ground game.
Yeah, it was like right after the fight, I was asked that same question, and it's just like, I don't know who I want to see him fight. The only thing I can think of is I would be tremendously amused by a submission grappling match between Houston Alexander and Chick Conga.
Yeah, that would be a clinic, right?
Yeah.
That
but,
would be...
Diego, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that would be a very interesting draw for the UFC.
Yeah, I mean, it would be tremendous comedy.
Yeah.
But Thiago Silva, I mean, he couldn't have looked better in this fight. He sent someone that I thought he's looked sloppy in the past, especially his match against Thomas Straw. Lots of sloppy striking, but he looked good. Who do you think he should be up against next? What level do you think Silva's on?
I think maybe put him against a established 205er like Stefan Bonner, a guy who's got a pretty good, well-rounded game that can match Thiago Silva's and who likes to stand like Thiago does. I think that would be a pretty good launch to him fighting higher-level guys. But right now, obviously, if you put him in against Quentin Jackson, it wouldn't be very good. But I think he has worlds of potential. You know, coming out of shootbox, having a pretty well-rounded game, he could go very far, and he is still very young. So he has a long time ahead of him in the sport, and I definitely look forward to seeing where the UFC takes him.
Yeah, one of the fights I've really wanted to see Silva in is against Lyoto Machida. I think that Silva is someone that could push the pace against Machida, and Machida is also someone that can calm him down. And, I think that would probably be the best fight for him. He would probably end up losing, but it would, you know, in turn make him a lot better fighter since he would really get to see that, hey, I can't go out there and go all out like this against a guy that's a counter-striker. And it would probably change his game a lot.
Yeah, it would be great experience because Lyoto Machida is definitely, you know, one of the top guys at 205 or at least the gatekeeper to the top level of 205 in the UFC. So, yeah, that definitely would be a good match for Thiago in the future.
Okay, the main event was a battle between two Ultimate Fighter winners, and that was Michael Bisping losing a split decision to Rashad Evans. And what was your thought on this one?
Not good. That's pretty much the two words you can sum that matchup in. That was a very disappointing main event. Neither guy really showed much. Evans pretty much did, you know, his wrestling thing. Bisping had opportunities to showcase this, you know, supposed great talent he has on the feet when Rashad was, you know, open in the later rounds and tired, and Bisping couldn't capitalize on that. Rashad couldn't put Bisping away. It wasn't the best of main events, obviously.
Yeah, Rashad Evans, he seemed to gas during the fight, and he also had that same problem against Tito Ortiz, too, that when he struggles to get the takedown, he seems to tire himself out. And that really affected his performance here. Bisping looked good in the fight. His takedown defense seemed much improved over the Matt Hamill fight. And he did a pretty good job against Rashad when a lot of people thought that Rashad was going to have a pretty easy time with him.
Yeah, I always thought it would be a competitive match. I was looking for more out of Bisping, though. I thought that he had the ability to, you know, gain advantage on the feet with Rashad. He was probably a little better of a striker, even though Rashad may be a bit more technical. I think Bisping had, you know, he had the power to perhaps take Evans out, but he never really capitalized, even in those later rounds when Rashad was gassing and tired. Bisping still couldn't, you know, gain a solid advantage over him.
Yeah, the first round was pretty much all Rashad. Rashad was able to take him down a few times and pretty much hold him down from the top. He really didn't do much damage, though. But I lost about a minute of the first round. There were some technical difficulties on the show. But the second round was, in my opinion, Bisping's round. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Bisping, I think he kind of woke after that first round when he saw that he had the ability to defend Rashad's takedown and he had the ability to kind of control the fight a little bit. I don't think he had that confidence going in, and the first round kind of gave him that confidence to open up a little more and to play his game plan a little more. and we saw that in the second round. He did, you know, he did gain a bit of an advantage on the feet. He didn't gain a large enough advantage, though, to, you know, put Rashad away or to take the fight decisively on the cards.
Yeah, the thing that was interesting about the second round was that seemed to be where Rashad's conditioning hurt him the most. And the third round, he came out, and it seemed like he had a second win. The announcers were, they were still claiming that Rashad was gassed, and, you know, he was, they were comparing him to, I don't know, I think Tank Abbott running the 10-yard dash.
Yeah. Rashad definitely seemed to gain a little bit after that second round, like Bisping did after the first round. Bisping did in confidence and Rashad did in, you know, energy. But I think that was mostly due to the urgency. He felt that, you know, Bisping was gaining a little bit on his heels and he had to step it up to win the fight.
Yeah, the probably the most important moment in the third round was Bisping ended up getting behind Rashad. And for some reason, decided to fall back and pull Rashad on top of him.
Which,
if he would have, you know, tripped him forward, okay, I could have seen the fight going the other direction in Bisping's favor.
Yeah, he definitely could have. That was definitely a missed opportunity where he could have gained a big advantage over Rashad, whether it was doing some ground and pound or maybe even getting submissions. You know, Bisping does have fairly good submissions. I think I would definitely categorize him as better than Rashad's. And any time you're in there with a guy who likes to take it to the ground and likes to be on top like Rashad, giving him the opportunity to get on top of you is just one of the worst things you can do. I mean, it's probably a cardinal sin if you're going against a wrestler like Rashad. And that was definitely not the best move by Bisping, but overall, I think he did fairly well in the fight. He showed a lot more than a lot of people expected him to, but it still just wasn't enough to overcome Rashad's dominant wrestling.
Yeah, coming out of this fight, it's very hard to picture either of these fighters, okay, moving up into title contention in the light heavyweight division. I mean, they just don't seem to be at that level yet.
Oh, yeah, and it's very funny. At one point, going into the fight, they said that the winner of this fight would face Quentin Jackson for the title, but after the fight, and when that was brought up, things were kind of hushed a little bit. That was played off as not being true, and we obviously could see why. They didn't seem like top contender kind of guys, you know, guys that would have much of a chance against Quentin Jackson, but you know, the UFC right now is very thick in the light heavyweight division, and these guys are in the midst of it. So you do have to kind of take that into consideration because they are at the higher levels. But as far as ability-wise, with them going in there and doing something, you know, against Quentin Jackson, against Chuck Liddell, I really don't see it.
Yeah, And I don't think Rashad Evans is really someone that they can have drawing in a main event position. He just doesn't seem like that there is much of a chance of him having an exciting fight.
Yeah, well, you know, his style isn't tailor-made for exciting fights, you coming in from a wrestling background. But, you know, he does have the drawing ability from being, you know, on The Ultimate Fighter, from winning that. But as far as gaining a following because of his ability, that doesn't seem to be, you know, something that is likely to happen.
Yeah, the other problem with Rashad is we really haven't seen him in that much trouble yet. We haven't seen him go up against another wrestler that was able to put him on his back and get the side control on him and see how he reacts to that.
Yeah, I think a good fight to be made now would probably be Rashad versus Matt Hamill. I mean, they're two pretty evenly matched wrestlers, both kind of in the same level in the division, and that would really stand to see, you know, how dominant Rashad's wrestling is against a guy who could probably match his wrestling. But as far as, you know, anybody else in the light heavyweight division. There's really not a whole lot of competition for him as far as his wrestling goes.
Yeah, and as far as the wrestling translating to MMA, I think Hamels actually translates better than Rashad, even though Rashad was the better college wrestler.
Yeah, Hamel has he has made a good transition as far as utilizing, you know, and all the power and the control. But I think Rashad may have a little bit better as far as the stand-up goes, but Hamel, he just might be a little more dominant on the ground.
Yeah, the one thing that has always surprised me about Rashad is how he doesn't seem to get up for his bigger fights. And, I mean, he looked very ordinary against Tito Ortiz, that he didn't do much in that fight. He didn't do much against Bisping. And this is a guy that defeated Greg Jones in the NCAA tournament. And it's like, okay, there's something different mentally with that Rashad in this one.
Yeah, it could be a little bit of intimidation coming into, you know, the MMA world from the wrestling world. But so far, it seems like he's been coasting on his wrestling. And when he does get in there against, you know, the Bisbings and the Ortiz, he doesn't show what he needs to show to be considered a top guy.
Yeah, and where do you think Michael Bisping goes from here?
I could see Bisping against, you know, maybe a Stephen Barner. I threw that out there for Thiago Silva. He might be a good matchup for Thiago Silva. He has pretty good stand-up and a good ground game, and I think he just needs to be in there with somebody who will push him in the way, like, Forrest Griffin and Rashad Evans push each other to get the best out of Michael Bisping. He's not going to fight at his optimal level against, you know, someone like Rashad Evans, who's just trying to coast out a decision. He needs to be in there against somebody who's going to push the pace with him.
Yeah, someone that I think would be a very interesting fight for Bisping would be Sokaju.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a guy that, you know, has tremendous strength and is going to come after you and has a very good clinch game.
It'd be interesting to see too, because they're both pretty young fighters as far as their mixed martial arts development goes along. It'd be interesting to see where they stack up against each other as far as who moves on to the further ranks of the light heavyweight division and who stays where they are.
Yeah, coming out of the show, the main event was announced for March 1st in Columbus, Ohio, and that will end up being Anderson Silva defending the middleweight title against the against Dan Henderson.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think that this is definitely going to be one of the better fights that we'll see in 2008.
Oh, without a doubt. I'm very excited. Hopefully we'll be getting to go to that fight, and it's one of the best main events they've had in a long time. It's going to be a very competitive match, and I think it could potentially be one of their best fights of all 2008. And I'm very excited to see how Anderson does with a guy who has such dominant wrestling as Dan Henderson. And I'm very excited to see what Dan Henderson has on the feet against a guy who has such pinpoint accuracy as Anderson Silva.
Yeah, it's very interesting because one of the things I've always said about Silva is he's never gone up against a dominant wrestler. And Henderson's just that, but he doesn't seem to like the fact that he's a dominant wrestler. He seems to be in denial sometimes.
Yeah. Henderson, he likes to go to that right hand a lot, and he likes to think he's a stand-up fighter a lot. But he's done pretty well there. He can hold his own there. But I think if he's going to beat Anderson Silva, he's going to have to take it to the ground, where Anderson potentially has, you know, that weakness.
Yeah, it's from the clinch should be real interesting, okay? It's, you basically have a Greco-Roman wrestler on the Olympic level in there against, you know, one of the guys that has a very dangerous tie plumb. And I'm interested to see that once these guys clinch up against the cage, who has the advantage there and who's able to dominate that position.
Definitely. I don't think it's going to be a question of who's stronger either. They're both, you know, on the stronger side for 185ers. You know, Henderson obviously coming down from 205. Anderson has said in the past that he could fight at 205, so that won't be a factor. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what Anderson has as far as the tie clinch and his knees when a guy like Dan Henderson is in there trying to throw you.
Yeah, the other news that I heard earlier today, I'm not sure if this is actual news or just a rumor at this point, but Fedor Emelianenko is supposedly going to be taking on Hongmin Choi on New Year's Eve for K1.
Yep, that's
have you heard anything about this yet?
I have heard that apparently on one of your competitors' radio shows, one of their journalists has confirmed it. And I don't know, with all the rumors that have been floating around with M1 lately on their website, Fedor is or isn't going to fight on New Year's Eve. I don't know if we can say for sure until we have, you know, Monty Cox out there saying, yes, this match is happening. But it's definitely a very interesting and intriguing rumor.
Yeah, any predictions on that one?
Well, obviously, Fedor, you know, all Fedor.
Yeah.
I think it's probably not the best fight for M1 to be kicking off their new promotion with. They want to be considered, you know, one of the top MMA organizations in the world. You know, you got to give us something a little better than that for Fedor's first opponent in your organization. That's, you know, that's not really something that you can go around bragging about.
Yeah, I'm just happy it wasn't Sakuraba.
Yeah, I think he's already booked for New Year's Eve for K1, so I don't know if that one was.
Yeah, he's fighting Masakatsu Funaki.
Yeah.
Which is sort of like a Japanese Legends match, so definitely should be a fun show.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting, to say the least.
But, yeah, that's about all we have for you tonight. And Amy's website is www.freewebs.com/PAFighter. And do you have any closing thoughts?
No, it's just it's going to be exciting in the next couple months in MMA. Everybody needs to stay tuned. It's going to be good.
Yes, and this Wednesday, I believe that's the 21st in Steubenville, Ohio, I'll be out there at the Next Level Fight Show cornering John Ofer as he goes for the Next Level Amateur Light Heavyweight Championship. And should be a good fight. John's been training pretty hard. So if you're in the Steubenville area or the Pennsylvania, Ohio area, pop on out there and check out the fights Wednesday night. There should be some decent action. Kellen Hughes is going to be fighting on the in one of the pro fights, and he's definitely someone to watch. He's a very exciting fighter.
Yeah, yeah. All those cards they have out in Ohio always seem to be pretty action-packed shows, and good luck to your fighter there.
Yeah, thanks. But that's all we have for you tonight, and we'll probably be back possibly next week with another update.
All right, so...